ゴジラが近づいております。警備隊の指示に従って避難してください。
Live images here in the studio.
Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. I don't know what it is.
Welcome to Tokyo Lives, the Giant Monsters podcast, where, unlike wild animals, these hosts never learn from their mistakes. I'm Rob.
And I'm Kyle.
And today, we're talking about Gamera versus Barugon. That's, you gotta remember the U, because
the U.
Barugon is another monster that is not in this movie, and not even in this universe. So, just remember.
Yeah, we're... just remember, it's Barugon.
Barugon. If I a mistake in your heads, imagine that I didn't make a mistake.
So yeah, remember that this is a direct sequel to the original Gamera film, as we see in the opening sequence of the film. This one is pretty fondly remembered from a lot of Gamera fans, because it kind of started the actual Showa Gamera, you know, fighting another monster thing. But we will talk about that in a second, because we actually have some news, just a little bit of news, a little bit of sprinkle of news.
A smidge. And, I feel like it's more than a smidge of news this time.
It's definitely a smidge. It's more than a smidge of news. So I'm going to start off the news with probably the biggest news for me personally.
Yeah.
So if you paid attention to our Twitter, we had to delay Giant Gila Monster by a couple of days because Marissa and I had to go to the hospital for baby-related stuff. Turns out my baby did not want to wait till his due date to come out. So he has been born. His name is Garrus. He is doing okay. He is in the NICU because he is 34 weeks. So he's a young baby. But he's doing great. Marissa is doing all right. We're hanging in there. So what that means for the podcast is pretty much nothing has changed from what we said last episode. I'm going to still take the month off starting next episode and going into the first episode of April. And then I will come back swinging at the end of April because we're going to be building up to King of the Monsters real hard starting at the end of April.
Boy, oh boy.
I mean, I don't know if we've officially announced what everything we're doing at the end of April. I know we've announced May, but I'll run through it real quick.
Yeah.
So at the end of April, we are going to be covering both of the Legendary Godzilla comics. So we're going to cover Godzilla Awakening, the much maligned prequel comic to Godzilla 2014. And then we will also be covering the brand new Godzilla Aftershock comic. And we'll be doing that as a special report, as if it's a new release movie. We've already got them all pre-ordered and on Amazon Prime, so they'll get here within 2 days of its release. So as soon as it comes in, we're all going to like sit down, go through that 100-page comic book, and record our thoughts on it right away, pretty much. And then, of course, in May, we are starting off May with Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, since that seems to be some sort of, this King of the Monsters seems to be some sort of spiritual, like, reimagining of that movie. And so we're going to cover that first. Classic Showa movie. And then finally, you've all been asking for it. We've all been talking about the movie every single episode. We are going to be covering Godzilla 2014, finally, giving our actual thoughts on the movie, what we think about it, how it stands up against, everything else.
I thought you were about to say the Gargantuans, because a lot of people have been asking for that, so I figured.
No.
No? Oh, okay. So Godzilla.
That's not in the plans. No, but yeah, we're going to talk about 2014. I'm super excited to talk about that, because, I mean, ever since even back in the day with me and Coleman, we talked about, like, general thoughts in the movie sprinkled throughout each episode, and then ever since, you know, the cast got rebooted, like, we've all done it as well. So it's going to be exciting to actually sit down and watch it to, you know, review for the cast.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the very end of May, actually, technically, the episode will be posted at the beginning of June. We will be talking about Godzilla King of the Monsters. We're all going to go see it, come home, talk about it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. Everyone's excited. So, yeah, like I said, nothing is changing from the original plan. Rob and Cameron are going to be handling the cast for the next two episodes. Mm-hmm. And then I will be back at the end of April to hit the ground running leading up to King of the Monsters.
So finally, my time is here. No longer the Blue Ranger of Tokyo lives. Finally, I can wear the mantle of the Red Ranger.
But see, then I show up at the end of April in the White Ranger. Oh, yeah. And then it's like, I become the leader.
Yeah. No, that's the, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, the next piece of news is a little bit of a just Tokyo Lives news, not necessarily world news for anything. So we've been talking about it since the end of last year, and we kind of been pinging that we were going to do it, but we never did it, and we hadn't come up with a good idea of how we wanted to do this. But now we have done it. The Patreon has been updated, so there are new reward tiers. Actually, it's pretty much just retoolings of the old reward tiers, but so the rewards they're a little bit, I would say, there's no larger tiers anymore. There's no the $25 tier. There's no $50 tier. It's just 15, 10, 5, and 2. So I'll go through what you get for each tier real quick. So the $2 tier hasn't changed at all. You get the thank you a thank you on the About Us page. And, of course, we say thank you every single episode. And also, you get 2 days early access to the podcast. The biggest change is all you $5 tier people out there will get the After Dark episode. So previously this was on the $10 tier, but we got a couple requests from our lower level patrons that wanted to listen to it because they love our comedy, and yeah, so we opened that up to the $5 tier. And then the $10 tier is, you get everything before, but you also get access to a Discord server, which we just set up, which we've all had a blast already doing for the last couple of weeks, where it's just exclusive chat room with us and you. We talk about news that's going on right when it's happening. We talk about just random stuff we find kaiju related.
Mm-hmm.
We're planning on trying to do some sort of giant group meetings as well, where like literally all the cast members get on at the same time.
Yeah.
Kind of like an actual chat room type of thing. We haven't exactly worked out when we're doing that yet, just because I'm going on hiatus. So it'll probably won't be until I get back. Unless Rob and Cameron want to do it, but then it's just the two hosts, which they're already on most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
And then of course the $15 tier. So the $15 tier changed a little bit. So you still get you get to suggest monthly articles for the Tokyo Live staff to write. So if there's something you want to hear us talk about that we haven't touched, that's not something that we're probably going to cover on the cast at some point, it's maybe something smaller, feel free to send that our way. And then the biggest change to the $15 tier is you also get to choose one of the four movies up for the vote in our fan month episodes. That's kind of a big deal. You get to really kind of influence what we're doing, and it gets the fair shot of, let everybody vote for it. So it's good stuff. Rob is taking a picture of the screen right now, and I don't understand why.
Oh, just the light shining off of your glasses really makes you look like Shinji's dad from Evangelion. So I was just trying to take a picture of that.
Perfect. But anyway, so go check out the new Patreon tiers. Hopefully, all of you people that are already your patrons are happy with the changes. If there's something, if you have maybe a slight suggestion about maybe something that could change, feel free to message it to us, because it's all a flowing process here. Nothing is set in stone.
Yeah.
We probably will end up changing them again at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Especially if we get more patrons and stuff like that. So, but that's the last little Tokyo Live piece of news. Now we can move on to the real stuff.
Whoa.
We're talking real news here. So the first one is a news article that me and Rob have gotten stuck talking about this twice now, and we're not huge fans of this franchise. I mean, we like the franchise, but we're not well versed in it, I guess is the way to say it.
Oh.
So there was a new Ultraman trailer for Netflix, for the Netflix series. And unfortunately, Cameron was going to be here and then he had to drop out. But, like, he would have been perfect to talk about, like, all the cool stuff in the trailer that we don't know what it is because yeah. I have no idea.
I know Dada shows up, but I only know Dada because of Cameron. And I know that there's three Ultramans. We don't see them get giant at any point. A lot of the old, like, villains are coming back. And this is a direct continuation of the original series in which... Yeah. The father, the main character from the first is the father of the main character from this one. And it's kind of like passing down the torch, but it's the Ultraman torch. And he's able to access this power through kind of like a power suit mm-hmm. and like the like alien light that's within him.
Yeah.
So it looks neat. Oh, I'm always worried about like CGI, you know, full CGI animation. We got a lot more movement in this trailer than we did in like the previous kind of like quick shot ones where it's a lot of like slow moving characters. And this does have the same thing from Blame that I didn't like where it's like really hitchy. Now that probably won't bother me nearly as much when I actually watch the full anime because it'll be the whole thing where it's like just seeing like a 2 second long snippet of like a character jumping. Mm-hmm. And only seeing like 4 frames is kind of worrisome, you know? And then like, it's also going to be the same thing. Like, but once you're watching the movie, like you have the whole experience and it won't feel as herky jerky. So
right.
I think that this style of animation just does not lend itself to a trailer, like or a commercial for itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it, the jerky animation doesn't bother me as much as I think it did with Godzilla, but then again, the Godzilla animation kind of grew on me as we were getting further into the movies.
Yeah.
So I don't know if maybe that's just why I'm just like, oh, well, it's just going to be kind of the same 3D animation as the Godzilla anime. And I've just kind of accepted it and just kind of shrugged it off at this point.
Yeah.
It does look really cool. In the trailer, there is technically a kaiju. He's more King Kong sized than, like Godzilla size or, you know, anything like that. And I did hear a rumor, and I don't know if the anime is going to go this far. Supposedly, eventually in the manga, he does grow to fight a monster at some point. So if that happens in the anime, then it's definitely something coverable by us. Especially because we would be basically following the Power Rangers rule that we did for the movies.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't a lot of giant monster stuff in those movies, but the, you know, history of the series has had giant monster stuff in it. So it kind of can fall into it, even if there's just a little tiny bit of giant monster stuff in it. and of course, Ultraman is giant monster heaven. So as long as there's a scene where there's like a giant ish monster fighting Ultraman, I definitely think we will cover it. As a normal episode, not a special report, but like as a normal episode somewhere down the line. But yeah, the new trailer came out. The series releases April 1st on Netflix. So it's coming up real soon. We'll get here before we know it. Not much else to say about it really. Like I wish Cameron was here cause he could pull out some of the like cool references to what the other Ultraman are and stuff like that. But I have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
Other than one uses a sword and one of them uses like a whip thing.
So yeah. There's, I believe it's Ultraman Taiga and Ultraman. And then I don't remember the last one.
Is it Ultra 7 is the other one? It might be Ultra 7.
It could be.
I don't know.
I feel really bad because, this is kind of outside of my particular wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. I'm not as excited as I was for Gridman because Gridman, you know, anime. But, like, I am excited just in general because it looks like, I really love power armor stuff. I really love, like, you know, dying superpowers. I love the concept of, like, you know, oh, hey, there's only a few charges left in this, like, Ranger coin. Oh, there's only a few, like, you know, transformations left of your superpower. You know, I love that style of hero, like, a lot. Like a lot. And I love the idea that it's just, like, he can't really turn into, like, an Ultraman anymore. So he has to have, like, a power suit that, like, helps, like, energize, like, what's left of the alien light that's in him. And I love the idea that, like, I would like to see, like, there's like that big triumphant moment of like the three like all in their energy to one person or something. And he like transforms into like Ultraman proper, you know, or like a redesigned Ultraman. and then like fights the big final boss, and like it's really cool and everyone like screams in excitement. Like, I'm super down for the possibility of this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited for it. Like, I mean, I know I need to get into more Ultraman stuff because it's like, it's a part of the genre that I really haven't dabbled in that much. So yeah. I know I need to like start looking at stuff, and I know we're going to start covering some of the movies and stuff on the cast at some point too. So that'll maybe get me into it. But yeah, so like I said, it's coming real soon. So, if we see, like, if we'll judge after we watch it, or at least one of us watches it, if we're going to cover it on the cast at some point in the future. And I mean, if fan requests that, you know, if the $15 patron throws it up on the vote and it gets voted, like, there's nothing we can do about it. So
I love that you're like, oh, there's nothing we can do. Like, drag our feet to Ultraman.
But anyway, now for probably the biggest news that we have today. This all happened in a whirlwind literally earlier this week. So I think it was Tuesday morning. We got notified that there was going to be a Total Film Magazine, which is a big UK movie magazine publication. That they were going to have a giant like Godzilla article section thing. And they released the cover arts, and they're very, very good. One of them is just Godzilla standing with like the military firing missiles around him, not at him. It's a very cool imagery there. One of the most interesting things about that image is it still does what it seems like this movie is going to do with the playing of colors.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you noticed that, like where the, like he's orange in the front, but the blue in the back, even though his spikes aren't lit up, it's still like the blue coloration on him.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool. And the movie seems to be doing the same thing, like with the lightning behind Ghidorah and Godzilla and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then there was the second magazine cover, which is your more traditional, like, splash page with all the text on it. One of the more interesting things that we saw before the article got released online was, what did it say, Rob? What did it call this movie?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so if Star Wars is a space opera, then this is a kaiju opera. I love that. I love so that good. So much. Oh, my gosh. That's,
oh man,
100% the best thing about this movie already, you know, like.
And then later in the day, we didn't think, like, we were like, oh, that's cool, we got the cover images, who knows when the art, like, the magazine's gonna release. They said it was gonna release to like subscribers later this week.
Yeah,
but they didn't say like when, and it's Total Film. So I've tried back with the 2014 Godzilla, they had Godzilla on the cover for that as well.
Yeah.
And I'd had to track it down because I wanted to own the magazine. But like in America, we don't get that until like a month after it releases in the UK.
Yeah.
So I honestly wasn't expecting it to be here until April. So I kind of gave up hope. But then literally like later that day, the digital version of it got sent out to all the subscribers of Total Film, and instantly we got the scans of the article.
Yeah.
And my God.
There's a lot of stuff in here, man. Like, oh boy.
So let's do it. Let's talk about the biggest things that are just visually there. So let's talk about the two brand new images that we got from this.
Okay.
First, and then we can talk about the details of like what the article goes into. I think that's the way we should go. So, first off, on the first page of the article is a giant, like, across both pages, image of Godzilla and Ghidorah fighting.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's Godzilla's like, I can't tell what position Ghidorah is in here. He looks like he's like crashed into the building and the head is like turned around looking behind him at Godzilla charging him. So yeah. I don't know if like Godzilla knocked him into the building or Rodan did or Mothra did or something. Like, I don't know where the context of this is like unknown to me. But it's definitely from what I think is going to be the final battle in the film. Some people have said that some of the buildings around him are buildings in Boston, and we know that's where the climax is going to take place. So I'm guessing this is the big final battle between Godzilla and Ghidorah.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. Godzilla's spikes are still doing the glowing thing, but with him not using his breath, so I don't know what that means. But we pointed that out before, that there may be something going on there.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem kind of like... just from what we've seen and like kind of like what we know of like the traditional burning Godzilla, like I think once you set this off, once you give him that power up, I don't think it's going to stop, you know?
Yeah, it might be him overloading. Yeah.
Or maybe, now, I don't know, maybe it's just like Super Saiyan like Goku for the rest of the Frieza fight, you know?
Maybe, yeah, honestly, I mean, maybe he is powered up in some way. I mean, we know Fire Godzilla is going to show up at some point, or Burning Godzilla, or whatever they're calling him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a very cool image. There's really not that too much to say about it. It just looks really cool, I guess is the only thing I could say.
Yeah.
But the next image, now that's something we can talk about, because this is like, I love film, okay? I love filmmaking. I love the process of filmmaking. I love cinematography. I love all that sort of stuff. This is probably, like, I gotta say, like, one of the most beautiful pieces of imagery that's, like, a direct screenshot from a film that I've seen in a very long time. It's, what it is it's Ghidorah. He's surrounded by, like, what looks like lava or fire or something like that, and he's screeching into the air with a strike of yellow lightning behind him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh God, it's beautiful. Like it's just it. I mean, we knew this movie was gonna look good, but this movie still surprises me every time I see something new. I just don't. I guess my mind can't fathom what like the stuff that I know is gonna happen, and you know what I mean. Like I can't picture it, and then I see something like this, and it just blows me away. So yeah, a lot of people have been joking about the fact that Ghidorah looks like he's singing in this picture.
Well, he's got his yeah. his arm wing outstretched up to the sky. Yeah. It's the we did tweet both of these. This one is the one that was Mike Daughtry. We retweeted it, but Mike Daughtry posted the Golden Demise.
Yeah,
and he's just like
he has a deep reference.
Oh boy, it's so good. He's got like his big old wing out, and his like heads are you know up and like arced outward. And it's just, it does kind of look like he's like going,
we literally called it a kaiju opera, right? Like, it's like he's singing at the opera.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's this big moment, right? You know?
Yeah.
I know, Rob, you have some stuff pulled from the article. One of the things I really want to say with the article as a whole, and I've kind of noticed this in interviews with Mike Daughtry, but like, and, you know, his Twitter posts, like we said, The Golden Demise, like that's a reference to the Godzilla anime film, which means he's watched that, which if you're not a fan of the series, you're not going to have tracked that down to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Daughtry is definitely a Godzilla fan. Like I've heard outside of this article, I heard him actually say that like he spent like an entire day of production fighting with the CG animators on how to animate Ghidorah's gravity bolts. Just his gravity bolts, not Ghidorah himself. But he was like, no, that doesn't look right. And then he pulled up like a clip of an old Toho Ghidorah scene and was like, no, it's got to look like this. It's got to branch out this way. And it's just like, that's so good. Like,
yeah.
The level of care there. But anyway, Rob, talk about some of the like highlights of the article, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. So I screenshot a bunch of things that I really particularly liked. And I'll actually start with a quote from him, Mike, first name basis, about like his love of Godzilla. And I just really like this line. Growing up, he, being Godzilla, was up there with Star Wars and superheroes and everything else. I mean, in some ways, above all that, because he was a monster, and I've always had pity for monsters. And this is really resonant of like the Guillermo del Toro love that he put into basically everything he's ever done with monsters.
Yeah.
And it's that meticulous like vision and drive that I really am excited about, because when you have someone who's super jazzed about the product at this late stage, you know, like there and like not just kind of like that fake kind of like, oh, yeah, no, like where they talk in really vague terms about what they like about it, but very specific things like this. It's like, OK, yeah, I've at the very least, this is someone's singular vision that they really, really loved. And I can't wait to see that, because at the end of the day, that's what cinema for me is all about, is seeing someone's like a slice of their gray matter being put onto a screen.
Right.
Through, like, you know, the process of, you know, hundreds of other people, like, you know, effort and, like, time and energy being put into it. But, like, this is cute. I really like that.
Yeah.
So let's see here. So the next thing that I really liked is kind of like, so they talked to the visual effects artists and like things that they specifically liked. For every creature that they tried to have like a visual like basis, a foundation for something to really look at, right? So Godzilla, Komodo dragons, and lizards, that makes total sense, right? That gets a little weird. Mothra, moths, obviously, and also wasps. Okay. Mm-hmm. And additionally, praying mantises. Ooh.
Which makes sense for her little attack arms that she has. Yeah,
yeah. Specifically because they want to try and make her more feminine. Rodan, a lot of birds and dinosaur skeletons, but particularly vultures and the way that they move. And I was like, that's interesting. And then they're like, for Ghidorah, they were like, we have no idea how we did Ghidorah. they looked at how cobras move their body and also how like wolf packs move. Which
for the
really,
three heads.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to see how that's going to, you know, like shape up.
So real quick before you move on to the next one, while you pull it up, like that's something I'm really getting like excited and curious about how it's going to show up on film. Is the whole interaction between the three heads. Because they really keep driving it home that the three heads have different personalities and they act differently and they, you know, the center head is the one in charge and the other two are different. Like, I want to know how they're going to do that because it's with them looking at wolf packs specifically, like, I used to be really into wolves when I was younger and that stuff is crazy. Like, all the non-verbal, like, communication within the wolf pack of like who feeds when and stuff like that. Like that stuff is really interesting. So I wonder how much of that is actually going to be with Ghidorah. Like how much are they going to drive into that?
I mean, they have three separate face actors. So they really wanted distinct personalities for each. They could have just paid one guy to do three faces. It would have been cheaper. They specifically went out and got three actors to play three distinct personalities.
Well,
that's awesome.
They even tied their legs together.
What?
Like, while they were acting. Yeah. Tied all three of them together so that they would act with each other.
This is starting to sound like a Stanley Kubrick movie. Jeez Louise. And then Mike Dowdery ran out with a bunch of glitter and threw it in their face and started screaming at them. I'm Godzilla! Run from me!
Oh my god, if there is something in the DVD special features of that.
Okay, so next thing, this is pretty important. Millie Bobby Brown is a big Fortnite fan.
Oh.
She taught Vera Farmiga how to do the floss dance.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Sorry, completely unimportant. I screenshot that one and then wrote next to it, LOL, I can't wait to do this to Kyle. So this is another quote from Mike Daughtry. God, this is so good. We kept saying that we wanted to put the god back in Godzilla. We wanted to add reverence to him. And like, ah, man, that's so good. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of adding, like, because there's, you know, there's plenty of moments where there's awe-inspiring, like, real, true, like, throughout the kaiju, like, universe. But it's, you know, it's usually, like, you know, from, like, Godzilla is standing up and kind of walking towards the screen. And usually it hits best when it's, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
But we've pretty solidly cemented this hero or this Godzilla as a hero. And I'm really excited to see, you know, awe being returned to all four of these mythological beings, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, that's something that he stated kind of over and over too, is the whole, like, making these creatures feel like gods as well as creatures. Like, and I love that idea that he's not making them complete gods. Like, he's not making them, like, unexplainable in the natural world, but he's still making it to where, like, these things are so far beyond us that they may as well be gods. Like, there's not, you know, it's just
we'll be
so
their
far
pets.
Away from us. Exactly, yeah. And
that
would have really
been a good mic check
feeling.
Question. What kaiju would you want to be your owner? So
save it for King of the Monsters stuff.
I'm sure
on.
Cameron will have a lot of fun with that one.
There you go.
So the next one, just a little quick quote from Vera, is that one of the things that she really, really likes about Mothra, being like that's her favorite kaiju, is Mothra has the added superpower of being able to give birth. So that makes me think, like, are we going to see Mothra die and then a Mothra larva show up at the end of this movie? You know, it's kind of like a
future.
Yeah, as yeah. kind of like a, oh, look, you know, I think they could do something like that. That might be fun.
I think so, too. Yeah.
You know, because it's paying homage to classic, you know, Mothra yeah. stories, but at the same time, doing it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. They went on to set, both Mike Daughtry and the other the person he co-wrote this with, Nick something. I forgot his last name. Nick Shields. And they were on set with writers of Godzilla vs. Kong.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they were like, hey, here's some rewrites that you should do. Hey, here's some things that'll line up better with our story. Hey, here's what you...
Yeah.
So there's a lot of collaboration between this and the next story. In, like, a way that I don't think we got, like, because I don't think we ever got, like, Gareth Edwards showing up and being like, hey, here's what I was thinking about with, remember that scene where there are the two little girls standing in the window?
that's really cool to me. I think that's one of the things that's actually, I'm not going to segue yet because there's more to talk about with the article real quick, but
oh yeah,
that's something that I'm about to rant about in just a second. But I think that, This is very indicative of the kind of shared universe they're trying to build, right? Like, where it's a collaborative effort with all the directors involved. Like, even Jordan Voight Roberts from Kong Skull Island helped with Godzilla vs. Kong. So, like, all three of these directors are kind of coming together and being like, hey, let's make this the culmination of at least the last two movies, really. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean?
Like, no, I'm very excited. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. I mean, it doesn't say that in this one, but I have seen that where Voight had been there.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that's exciting stuff, man. I'm really excited to see how they kind of tie these two worlds together. So let's see. Oh, I do really like this quote. It's still in the same like dialogue box, but the interviewer's like, so who do you think would win in a fight between Godzilla and Kong? To which Mike Daugherty simply grinned and replied, the audience. And I was like, okay, yeah, true, fair.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
So the next thing I want to get to, unless you have something.
There is something in the article. I'm waiting to see if you're going to bring it up, though.
Oh, the very next thing I want to talk about is Godzilla has a lair.
Yes, that's what I was going to bring up.
Oh, that's literally the next screenshot I have is one specific invention for King of the Monsters is Godzilla's lair, which we finally get to see on screen. I've always wondered since I was a kid, where does Godzilla wander off to in the credits roll? Ponders Mike Daughtry. Because every Godzilla film ends with him wandering off into the ocean. Batman's got a bat cave. Superman's got the Fortress of Solitude. So it all seems to make sense that Godzilla would have somewhere to go. oh boy. Godzilla has a bat cave. I am so excited to see all the trophies. I mean, that's probably where, like, because we have that scene where they're underwater and you see him kind of like floating. I'm wondering if, like, he gets hurt and then Gamera's and, like, swims into the ocean to go hide in his lair.
I think that's exactly what happens.
Really 100% hoping for is that Godzilla takes trophies. And you're going to see a bunch of, like, kaiju skulls in there and a giant quarter that he killed from a quarter-themed, like, kaiju.
Like Predator style?
Yes. He's got several, like, spines in there. I would love that if, like, suddenly it hard turns and it turns into that doujinshi where it's Godzilla the hero.
Yeah.
And he's, like, got a sword and shit. I would love that so much.
I think we've seen the lair in the trailers, because the temple that they're going through underwater is definitely probably part of the lair, and then also where Godzilla is, like, all weakened and looking at Sarazawa.
Yeah,
I think that's his actual lair. I think that's the whatever, because they talk about it in the article too. They say, like, there was a symbiotic relationship between an ancient culture and Godzilla. So, like, whatever that relationship was, it was inside that temple that Godzilla is laying on top of.
That's
a very good question that Michael Daughtry have. I've actually thought of that too. Like, where does he just go to the bottom of the ocean? Like,
he
kind of
sleeps. He kind of, like, you know how the middle point of every Gamera movie is he has to take a nap? Well, that's kind of like the end of every Godzilla movie.
It's true.
Basically, we're just catching, like, Godzilla between, like, Godzilla's ventures end, whereas Gamera, we're catching, like, the midway point of two different movies.
yep. Yep. All right. So, yeah, the article, we retweeted it on our Twitter. There's a full scans of it. You can see all the cool images, like we said. There's more details than we even mentioned in this article that are just like little tiny things that are very, very good. I highly suggest reading it. I highly suggest picking up the magazine if you want to once it comes to America. I know I'm going to, even though I've read the article already, just to have it. So before we move to Gamera, it's time for Kyle to have a little bit of rant time.
I'm going
to
go ahead and just mute my mic.
So... I had a discussion with, put your headphones back in. Rob unhooked his headphones.
Sorry, I'm back. I didn't actually leave.
But anyway, so I had a bit of a discussion with someone on one of the Facebook groups. I'm not going to mention what Facebook group, not going to mention who it was with. This person was a older Godzilla fan. And so he was very adamant about why the MonsterVerse is ending in 2020. I feel like I've had a rant about this on the cast in the same section, in this same way. But it's going to be about something very specific this time. So fans, G-fans, Godzilla community, like, we can come together when we really want to. We just proved that yesterday with the whole trying to get the screening for the person who unfortunately did pass away before he could get to see Godzilla King of the Monsters. But we all came together. We sent what we like got to Warner Brothers, Legendary, whatever. Can we come together and stop sending out this misinformation that it has been 100% confirmed? It is a 100% fact that the MonsterVerse is ending in 2020. Can we stop it? Because it's getting bad. It's fake news, to use the buzzwords in America right now. It's fake news. We have no idea what is happening after 2020. That is the only truth. We don't know. We know that Godzilla's rights are going back to Toho in 2020, but that does not mean that Legendary's movie series is ending in 2020. There's never been any sort of confirmation, never been any sort of official discussion from Legendary or Warner Brothers about what's happening after Godzilla versus Kong. I'm going to assume that they're looking at these movies like studios used to look at movies back in the day before Marvel set up the whole, we're going to plan out our movies 10 years in a row now. Like, I don't know if you remember back in the day, we used to have to like cross our fingers for a couple of years to hope for a sequel announcement most of the time. Like, if there was a movie we really liked and we wanted to see a sequel, it wasn't a right after the movie came out, we got a sequel announcement. It was like a year later. They were like, oh, by the way, we're filming a sequel coming out in 1997 or something. You know, like, It's just baffling to me that the Godzilla community is either A, not having enough faith in the Godzilla series or the MonsterVerse, and they're just not trusting that Legendary is going to want to keep it going, or they're just, I don't know. It baffles me. I don't know what it is. I don't know why fans are doing it. Can we just say if the MonsterVerse ends in 2020, like, or it may end, but instead, all I've ever seen in the community is it is ending. Every post I see is saying it is ending. My problem with that is there are Godzilla fans who are new to this series because they saw the new recent trailers and they're like, oh, that looks really cool. I've never really seen a Godzilla movie before. What is this? And then they find out about Godzilla versus Kong and they're like, oh, that sounds really cool too. Like, I like Skull Island, you know, like, or something like that. And those people aren't going to be willing to go do all the research to learn that there's not a confirmation or something like that. All they're going to see is, oh, I got accepted to this Facebook group or on Reddit or wherever. And these people who clearly care about the series more than I do have said that it's ending in 2020. So why should I get involved with a new franchise if it's about to end? You see what I'm trying to say, G-fans? You see what I'm trying to say? Like, can we just please, please, please stop saying it is going to end? It may very well end, but the fact is we don't know. You can do all the research in the world. You can do all the number crunching of, like, how much money each movie has to make for them to continue the series. You can do all of that stuff. But the fact is it's still speculation until Legendary, Warner Brothers, or Toho come out and officially say Godzilla vs. Kong is the end of the MonsterVerse, or that is the end of this franchise, the shared universe that they set up. I honestly believe that we're just getting started. If Godzilla King of the Monsters does as well as the trailers are tracking, we have nothing to worry about the franchise continuing. Toho and Legendary and Warner Bros. Will work out all the details of the rights behind the scenes. We probably won't even know what the details of the rights behind the scenes are, ever. Even if they make an official announcement about the series ending, we're not going to know. It might have been because of Toho. It might have been because Legendary and Warner Brothers just don't want to do it anymore. We won't ever know that. But the fact is, we have no official statement. So please, G-fans, try to watch your wording when you're posting articles and stuff. Because it's hurting our fan base. It's hurting our fan base from growing to people that maybe have never seen a Godzilla movie before. Because they're going to see that and go, well, I don't know why I would get interested in it if it's only got, you know, one movie left. Because shared universes and big series are the freaking buzzwords right now. So that's my diatribe for the day. I got very, very angry. I was yelling it out loud as I was typing it on the Facebook group. And I wasn't mad at the dude. I was just like frustrated that it was still going on, because I think this same thing happened like 4 months ago, and I was angry about it back then too. So anyway, we've got a movie to talk about.
Hey. Oh, hello everyone. I'm still here. Yeah, are you ready? You feeling good? You feeling jazzed for this movie?
I suppose so.
You're ready to hunker down, plot out our secretive plan, make our way to the island where we left the movie in a small duffel bag, and then inevitably betray Cameron, and probably one of us will betray. It's probably gonna be me. I'll probably betray everyone, and then because I just want that good episode. I need that episode, Kyle. Give me the $20 you have in your pocket.
But yeah, so after the break, we're going to take a little bump break and go get some drinks, use the bathroom, all that good stuff while you don't hear what we're doing. unfortunately, for the After Dark listeners, I'll go ahead and spoil it. There's probably going to be some dead air here because me and Rob are probably going to disappear at the same time. but we'll be back after the break and talk about Gamera versus Barugon.
Barugon. Bye.
Bye. Be back.
A monster will destroy us all.
Prehistoric monster.
A monster will destroy us all.
Sure, look at that monster.
A monster will destroy us all.
Prehistoric monster.
A monster.
This monster you see. You think your bombs will stop him?
And we are back to talk about Gamera versus Barugon. I keep wanting to say Baragon, but it's Barugon. So I stuttered before I even got to Gamera because I was like, don't say it wrong, Rob. Don't say it wrong.
What was the other title? It was like War of the Giant Monsters or something like that.
Conflict of the Large Beasts, I believe.
Or something like that.
I'm sorry. That was a bad joke.
So we didn't discuss it in the break. Who's doing the plot?
Oh, you know what? I'll take this one. I'll take this one for the team.
Okay.
You know, Cameron got introduced to this podcast because of me. I bear this burden. Because it would have been him doing this.
Yes,
it would. Okay. We start off our movie exactly the way that Gamera, the original movie, ends. Gamera gets put into a rocket ship and launched into outer space. But then they retcon it, in which Gamera gets hit by a meteor, gets even more powerful than we've ever seen him before, and then flies back to Earth, blows up a dam, and disappears for the next 40 to 45 minutes of the movie. Smash cut, a whole different movie starts, and it's Ocean's 11, but it's Ocean's 4, and it's more like I forgot the guy's name, but it's more like four individual bros, and they're like, hey, I'm the lead heist guy. I have a bad leg. My brother is really good at stealing stuff. You're the muscle, and you are the goofy friend guy of my brother.
Yep.
So at some point in time, I tried to steal a gem from this island. It didn't go so well, but I know exactly where it is. You guys just need to break onto this island and steal this gem. We're going to make a bunch of money from it. And that's going to be awesome. Smash cut to the island. They get the rock. Turns out the muscle guy is actually a traitor, and he just wants money. He's super greedy and betrays everyone. First, lets a terrible super scorpion kill the goofy friend guy, and then throws a bunch of bombs into the cave to trap and kill the brother, right?
Yes.
He makes his way back to land, where there's a heat lamp that is on to kill foot fungus.
An infrared light, not a heat lamp. It's an infrared light. Oh,
you're right. Yep. I'm sorry. So there's an infrared light where he leaves the opal stone in his coat pocket. The infrared light superheats the little gemstone, which actually is a Berugon egg. So Berugon hatches and starts to run hog wild on the town. It's really cool for about 5 minutes, and then we smash cut back to the human plot. The human plot continues for a little bit. The brother had on the island had actually lived. He teams up with a native from the island, and they go to try and confront Berugon with a magical crystal that will attract his attention, and they're going to try and convince him to walk into the water. But he's been mutated, so they have to make a super like laser cannon version of the diamond.
Did you skip the fact that Gamera showed up and fought Berugon?
Oh, that's right. That does happen right before that. Yep. Sorry. Gamera shows up for a bit, fights Berugon, gets frozen, falls asleep again. Anyway, back to the human plot, which again is more important to this movie, where we have the brother and the girl from the island now trying to trick Berugon into wandering into some water. It doesn't go as planned, and then it doesn't go as planned again, and then it just goes planned a third time. and then eventually Gamera wakes up a little bit. They do some damage to Berugon by reflecting his superheated rainbow back at him, which makes him bleed a little bit. And then Gamera drags him into the water and drowns him and breaks his neck. And yeah. Then that's the end. Gamera turns into a good guy. For the rest of the series.
For the rest of the series. So, okay. All right. So, let's I'm trying to think of how to, like, go into this. So, first of all, I think that, like, before we even get into, like, talk about the characters or anything like that, like, Gamera is barely in this movie. And I mean...
Gamera is the C-plot in his own movie.
Very much the C-plot. Like... You know, sometimes the kaiju will take the backseat to, like, the human story. But, like, This movie takes it to a whole new level, I feel
100%. Like. So, let me just break this down like a Simpsons episode, right? So, a Simpsons episode, Homer doesn't have any money. So, he's like, oh, no, I've been fired from my job. Plot point A, right? Plot point A is resolved when suddenly, oh, wait, I can just become a plowman. And he's going to become like a new, he becomes Mr. Plow, and then plot B kicks in.
Yeah.
And plot B is like him with a rival, like snow plowman. And then like goofiness happens. And then there's maybe like a third story that's kind of interwoven in there, in which Bart is like trying to like, I don't know, make a snowman and like gets pushed into the snowman and then pushes a giant snowman on top of someone else. That doesn't actually happen in the Mr. Plow episode. I just wanted to like really delineate the minor and least significant part of this movie is Gamera's plot in this movie.
Yeah, man. Gamera really is not in this movie a lot. And like, it's not, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't think it would have helped this movie if Gamera had been in the movie more.
Well, here's the thing. I think the lighting in this is so amazing. I think that the fight and like honestly, I think Berugon is pretty rad. I think that if this had been just more of a kaiju movie, because here's the thing, I love the Gauss movie so much.
Yeah,
I love it to death. I love it so much that my heart explodes when I think about like the American Beauty kid thinking about bags. That's how I think of the blood, like Ferris wheel. That's what I like. It's just so good. It's so wonderful. Boy, this is getting into my final thoughtsy kind of thing. So let's talk characters for a bit,
right,
you know?
All right. Let's talk characters. So as you kind of described, there's a few main characters here. So first we have Keisuke, Hirata, who is the main character. As we always say.
Yeah, he's the brother of the guy who's planning the heist in the beginning.
Correct. He wants to open his own travel agency is what he wants to open.
Yeah.
And he's okay for a main character, honestly. I mean, he's pretty generic, but I mean, that's fine. For he serves his purpose in this movie, I would say.
I mean, he does kind of go from like lovable thief to hardened military action bro, like on the drop of a hat. You know,
well, you get blown up in a cave and see how fast you become a badass action hero.
You know what? That's fair. I've never been trapped in a cave after someone threw grenades at me and my best friend died. So that's very possible. You know, it does feel though like he goes from kind of like cornball thief to drama guy to action star. You know.
Yeah, no, it's
like his plot progression.
I was joking with you. It is a like very like abrupt change, but so I'm trying to think of like what else to say about the main character. I mean, he like I said, he's fine. But I guess what I want to say about the main character should be bundled with the next character on the list, which is Karen, the village girl. I don't know why she's named Karen. She speaks Japanese. And she is the stereotypical, like, love interest for some reason, because they need something love interesty in this movie for no reason, because they needed more plot lines, I guess. It kind of goes along with Keisuke, like, where I feel like they... Neither of these two characters are written very well. Keisuke, no. Like, is a decent main character for a kaiju film, if it was more of a kaiju film.
She has one moment of like really cool. So, okay, there's two problems with her. First off, her village is straight up just like the racist caricature village from Godzilla vs. King Kong. They have the same brown face and everything, and it's like, oh boy, that's rough.
I didn't look it up, but I think it actually is the same dance company too. Because in the credits, it thanks the dance company that did it. So I don't know if it was the same one or not.
Their outfits are like shockingly similar, because they just would go with that like stereotypical... what we think, you know, African tribal garb looks like. Uh-huh. They've got like the big ground shields and everything. Oh boy. Big oval shields. For her, the defining moment for this character is the bar fight sequence, in which Keisuke is fighting for his life against a bad guy, right? And he's like choking him out at one point. Keisuke is being choked out by the bad guy, and she's reaches over and grabs a whiskey bottle and she bangs the bad guy on the head. And it's like, yeah, all right. She's getting involved in the fight. Cool. And then immediately she folds her hands across her chest nervously, like the girl, like superstar. And then like they start fighting for another 30 minutes. And it's like, he's choking him again. Hit him with another bottle. Keep hitting him with bottles. There are more bottles all over the place. To keep hitting him, but that is indicative of her character throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Come in, do one important thing, then stand quietly in the background while, like, the plot happens around her.
So, we actually don't have that many new other characters to talk about, because most of them don't really matter. But the only other character to really talk about is Mr. Greedy himself.
Yes.
Onodera is the greedy bad guy.
He's, yeah, the aforementioned bad guy in the bar fight. The aforementioned guy who betrayed everyone with grenades and scorpion stings.
Yes.
And filing cabinets, honestly.
He is so over the top.
He's comically greedy in ways that like are detrimental. Like, it's like, you know, I get some of it makes sense, right? I'm going to betray these people to get money. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to push this filing cabinet on top of someone and steal money from him and then like let him be killed by the giant monster. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to run into an active combat military zone right up alongside this giant monster, and then I'm going to try and steal a diamond.
More on that later.
Like level of greed is so comic and so over the top that it's like, what are you doing, my dude?
Also, more on that later in my least favorite moments.
Oh.
None of the other characters matter, really. There's the doctor. I take that back. There is a character that matters, but he doesn't matter for the reason that you think he does. There's the professor Amino, He's the guy who
Designs the crystal laser.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is only important because he was in Gamera vs. Gauss, the next movie in the timeline.
He comes back
a couple of times. So he's important. He's like the only carried over character for any of these movies.
Other than Gamera.
Other than Gamera. But yeah, okay. I think we just need to get to favorite, least favorite.
Do you want to start with favorite? Because I feel like where there's not a lot, we can just focus on that. Then we can just really drag this thing through the mud.
Let's
start with
sandwich.
Least favorite.
I think we have some good things to say about this movie. And like those are mostly going to be like the cinematography and the monsters themselves.
Okay. So
like
good
start with
news,
least favorite.
Bad news. No, wait. Compliment sandwich is good news, bad news, good news. Right?
That's a good point. Well, okay.
Then what you want to do is start with... Okay. So yeah. Do you want me to start with my favorite moment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My favorite moment, man, is the first fight between... despite forgetting it when I was describing the plot, the fight between Gamera and Baragon in the first like intro bit, the lighting is so good. It's at night. They do a good job of not overlighting the characters, or overlighting the kaiju. So they have like kind of this dark, but you can still see them very clearly.
It almost looks black and white because of the snow and the cold effect that they did. So like it really, the only thing that you can you could see the monsters clearly, but like their eyes, because they do have the light behind them.
Yeah.
Like really show up in the silhouette of the creatures.
Yeah.
In that fight.
Well, yeah, because Gamera and Barugon both have like glowing eyes, but Barugon has the added benefit of having glowy spikes. And man, it just, that whole fight sequence looks so good. The special effects are so impressive.
Yeah.
You know, considering like what I expected from like with the rest of the movie up to this point, I was like, I don't even care if they fight. I just want this movie to end. And then it was like when the fight started, I was like, this movie could have been so good. This director clearly had a vision or an idea of how to do this right. And I was like, I was in love with the movie for about like 5 minutes because like Barugon has ice powers, rolls in and freezes like an entire like chunk of, I guess, Osaka.
So hold on. I'm going to cut you off there because you're actually describing my favorite moment.
Oh,
My favorite moment is literally the first sequence with Barugon attacking the city.
Yeah.
And it like flows into your favorite moment. So it's like perfect. Like, so yeah, my favorite moment is that first sequence with Barugon. Cause it's great. It's fantastic. It's like grade A, like 60s kaiju attacking the city. There's some really good pyrotechnics. Actually, there's some really good pyro work in this entire movie, which we'll talk more in the special effects, I feel. But like, there's a cool military attack with Barugon where he freezes them, like freezes the tanks.
Yeah.
And it's like they literally took some Freon and like froze the model tank, and it looks really cool. Like,
he also does it to a jet, which I really liked.
Yeah.
And you see the model jet like falling apart slowly after it gets iced, which the one downside, and this is sound design, but it sounds like fabric tearing when the ship falls apart.
Yeah.
Which was kind of dumb, but at the same time, they did freeze a model and slowly tear it apart, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, like that is where the movie is at its peak, is those two sequences. The two sequences we just described are like when it's at its peak. There are some fun sequences later.
I'll say that
the
final
into the water.
Yeah, thing. The final fight is pretty interesting, and I do really like when they reflect the rainbow heat beam back at Barugon, and just the battle damage they do to the suit looks really cool.
They do real good battle damage to Barugon throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, he gets stabbed, like, in the first fight with Gamera, like, stabs him in the
cheek. Stabs his neck, yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. Like, it's very brutal, honestly. I mean, Gamera's always been known for those brutal sequences, but, like, that was like, oh, damn, you know?
You can very clearly see that after this movie, they were like, oh, well, we'll just really beat up Gamera every movie. Like, this is the movie where they're like, people really like the blood.
So this movie, we're about to get to Lee's favorite moments in a second, but like this movie it set pretty much the precedence of what a Showa Gamera movie would be, right? Like it set up the whole Gamera fights the monster, Gamera gets defeated, comes back later, fights the monster again and kills the monster.
Yes.
And that gets carried throughout not even just the Showa, but through like literally every Gamera movie after this.
Yeah.
which is fine. It's fine. Yeah. But in this movie, I feel like going back to this movie after watching, like, not even just, like, the Hezai Gamera, because that's not even fair, but, like, watching, like, Gauss, even, and going back to this movie, you kind of go, wow, Gamera really didn't, like, there was no reason for Gamera to disappear for as long as he did in this movie.
No.
In the middle.
Like, well,
in Gauss, he gets, like, cut up by the beams, and, like, he comes back to fight Gauss again and gets even more hurt. Like, you feel the damage of him throughout that movie. Even in Zigra, like, he gets legit hurt, as goofy as it is. But, like, it's still something. Whereas this movie, he gets frozen, and then, like, there's no, like, going back to check on what Gamera is doing.
No, he just at some point wakes up enough to start using his heat breath to thaw himself.
Yeah.
There's not like a moment where they're like, well, we need to wake up Gamera, or we need to trick the monster into using its heat beam on Gamera to heat him up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, Gamera got better. And
I guess that's supposed to be because Gamera is technically supposed to be a monster in this one. Like, he's not a good guy.
Yeah, but he's specifically fighting this thing. And the let them fight methodology did exist at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like the first time that they were like, two kind of evil critters are punching each other.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, we're getting into like least favorite moments without actually saying our least favorite moments. But one of the things that I actually did actually kind of bother me now that you mention it is in the final battle, when Gamera does wake up and flies towards Baragon, I didn't feel the reason for Gamera going there, because they established early in this movie that Gamera, as you joked in the chat, is like almost like a moth.
He's like a moth. He follows wherever heat is, except for when he's drunk and bashing into the side of a like a dam for some reason.
He was so full of fire. He was so happy. Like, he just didn't know what he was doing anymore.
I guess. I don't know. That whole bit.
No,
lordy.
That was. But my point is, in the battle versus Baragon, though, at the end, there was no reason for Gamera
to show
up.
There's no reason for him to go,
There's no fire. I mean, there's no anything.
Yeah, it's not like the rainbow beam being reflected, like, was, like, it heated up the mirrors or something. And like, oh, it's even hotter. It's waking Gamera up. Or, you know, the camera's so hungry for this heat.
Or it caught the forest on fire or something. Yeah. They could have done something that, like, made it make sense. But in the context of this movie, it literally makes no sense that Gamera goes after Baragon again.
I guess what we're trying to say is least favorite moments?
Okay, yeah.
You want to start?
Let's go.
Do you want to go first?
I'll go first. And if I dip into yours, you can come in with yours, and I think we'll just kind of
feel free
go at it here. Okay, so I have three. One of them is a minor complaint, but it's something that I had picked out two, and then like this third one popped up, and it really bothered me, and I couldn't figure out why until it was actually something you said a little earlier that really sunk in why I really didn't like this moment. This movie, and I'm going to start with this one. This movie has a tone problem. And that tone problem is that it tries to be serious, but then it'll randomly throw not like a scene in there that's funny or like goofy, but it's just like some small thing like Onodera like overacting. Or the thing that really bothered me was the stupid scientist naming the every plan that they come up with.
Ah, yes, the diamond plan. Ah, the laser gun attachment plan.
No,
ah, the...
What was the last... The last one is the one that bothered me. It's the rear view mirror plan.
Yes.
Like, are you serious? Like, in a goofy movie like Gauss or something like that, where there is a bit of levity there, like, you can get over it, and you can laugh at the fact that they set up a blood fountain and be like, what is this?
Yeah, but that's consistently tonal, like, throughout the whole thing. Like, we slowly get crazier and crazier, but, like, we start off with the most dramatic moment is a helicopter gets cut in half, and it's so slow that, like, people start falling out of the cut-in-half helicopter.
But it's almost funny a little bit.
Because, yeah, it's fake. Yeah, it's super very... It's very clearly like, oh, this is like an impossibly weird thing. So, ha ha ha. You can laugh at it. And on this movie starts with like a heist and then... Okay, no. To be fair, this movie first starts retconning the end of the previous movie, right?
A little bit. I mean, it's not a big retcon. It's just like... Oh, a meteor intercepted the rocket. Now Gamera came back. Like, that's pretty much
all
it is.
That's the problem. That right there, the fact that it is a, oh, by the way, also this.
Yeah.
Is the laziest intro I've ever seen to a movie in my life. Ever. Ever. I've never seen a movie like cheap out a beginning more than this. And I've seen some cheap beginnings. This is going to be one of my least favorite moments, and it ties into tonal shifts, is basically it's the black and white footage of the original Gamera being put into the rocket ship. The rocket ship closes, and then the narrator comes in and is like, and then we activated Plan Z and launched Gamera into outer space. Then a meteor hit him, and now he's more powerful than ever, and he's back on Earth. And then it's a short scene of him waking up to destroying a dam and then flying off somewhere. And the narrator comes back and says, and then he sensed another heat source and he left the dam. And it's just like so weird. So I feel like actually, that narrator came in a few times.
We're segueing into each other. This is perfect because the narrator is the second of my three.
I got your back, baby.
Because, God, okay, all right. So
the narrator is third person omniscient for Gamera?
So we watched Gigantus the Fire Monster, right? Which probably has the worst narration in the English dub of any movie ever to exist, where they describe everything that's happening.
Yeah.
This movie isn't worse than it, but it's almost just as bad, because what it does is they literally have scenes of the characters explaining what is happening. Like, they're like, oh, we're going to reflect the rainbow beam back at Barugon with the giant mirror. And then guess what the narrator says, literally one cut next to it. He repeats everything they literally just said in the previous frame. And it's the most annoying thing in the world. It bothers you, it bothers everybody in shows and stuff, where it's like you're watching a TV show, and like within the same episode, they flash back to something that happened in that same episode of the TV show. You're like, I just saw it. I don't need you to remind me.
Like, so the biggest problem I have with this verse is Gigantus the Fire Monster. I want to compare those two. In Fire Monster, it is obscenely detailed. It is a character like having his active monologue thoughts. And it's so insanely like, and then I flew through the fog, and on the other side of the fog, I saw this. And when I saw that, I noticed my friend, you know. So it's just like bullet point by bullet point explaining what we see happening on screen, because they assume that the watcher is like bored out of their gourd or something. I don't know. that to me is hilarious. It's dumb. It's bad. It shouldn't be, but it's there,
it's
and because
funny.
It is, yeah. I was like, I was kind of like enthralled with it. I was laughing. It was enjoyably bad, you know? In this one, it's like, and I said it just a little bit ago, it's this third person, you know, deity that's watching the movie that has insight to what the characters are thinking.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just repeating what a human does. And that's annoying and bad and not good. But where it's like really weird is when it's like, and then Gamera sensed another fire source off in the distance. Goodbye,
right.
Gamera. He left for the rest of the movie.
Right.
And then like Gamera just floats up and flies off. We don't see anything that would attract Gamera to it. We don't have any implication of why Gamera is leaving other than this narrator who just comes in only during scenes where Gamera is doing something to explain why Gamera is doing it. And it's like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You could have a character on set or, you know, like have like one of the, oh no, he's damaged the generator. We're losing all our power. Wait a minute. He's leaving. He must have been attracted to the heat from the generator. Something like that. You just have one character say that. Instead of a narrator like saying, and that's when he discovered it, you know, or like, and he flew into outer space and a rocket, a meteor blew it all up. It's all gone.
I mean, I know that's a stylistic thing from the time period, but it doesn't make it better. Yeah. It's very annoying. And then to segue to my last one, because like, This one just made me like, you know, like Gila Monster, where I got like obscenely angry about the nitroglycerin. This one like made me just as angry as that, where it's in the sequence where they're luring Barugan. So they figured out that they need to put the diamond inside of an infrared laser to try and lure him, because he was mutated by the infrared laser or the infrared light on the ship. So that's fine. That scene is perfect. I actually really like that. I like that they tried the diamond. It didn't work. They figured it out. That's cool. That's like traditional kaiju movie. Like, we got to figure out how to do the thing. So then they put the laser on a aquatic car, like a car that can go into the water and becomes a boat when it goes into the water.
Yeah, the Austin Duck Tours.
There you go. Yeah. So
no one will be familiar with that. That's a local reference. I'm very sorry.
Duck Tours are something that's everywhere, though, where it's like a boat that, like, it's a car that you ride in and then it goes into the water and it, like, has propellers and all sorts of stuff on it. Anyway, so they go, they're luring him in. Barragan is, like, following them. We haven't seen Onodera for a little bit in the movie. Like, he like, said that he was going to come do something, but we hadn't really seen much from him. So suddenly, they get to the middle of the water. Barragan is, like, on his way into the water. And suddenly, we hear a boat. We hear a tiny motor of a boat. And all the characters on the little duck thing are like, what is happening right now?
I forgot what's infinitely worse than this. Finish this, but I have something to follow up about this.
So keep in mind, this is a military trying to defeat this giant monster. So it's not like it's just the scientist and the main character on this boat. There's two soldiers, both with automatic rifles, supposed to be like guarding the event that's going on. But instead of them doing anything about this random boat that's approaching them, they just kind of stare at it dumbly. And then, like, when he gets there, the main character Coon's like, Onodera, what are you doing here? And it's the most just like, what is happening right now? Like, shouldn't have the military already been warned about this crazy person that's like trying to like do all this stuff? But anyway, I'll let you get to yours. But my problem with that scene is not even the fact that they didn't shoot him whenever he got close or like try and stop him. My problem with that scene is the fact that the guy literally took forever to pick up his gun. Like, he tried to shoot Onodera, and instead Onodera pulled out a pistol and shot him first. And then the other military guy that was standing right next to him did nothing. And it's the most inept, like, military sequence, whenever the military in this movie has not been shown to be inept. Like, they've been trying their hardest to stop Barragan. Like, it's not like they were, like, you know, goofy, like, inept military guys, like, oh, we don't know what we're doing, you know? Like, it's very out of place, and it doesn't make any sense in the context of this film that's trying to be serious. So, anyway, Rob, what were you going to talk about?
So, okay, you said he went there for some reason. There is a reason. So, right after the bar scene, after the bar fight, the main character and his lady love tie the bad guy, Onodera, up to like a post. And I thought, like, oh, it's going to be poetic justice. He's going to be tied there. It's, you know, Barugan, like, storms through the area. No. A waitress walks in and is like, oh my gosh, who are you? And he's like, just untie me. I'll tell you later. And she's like, okay. So she unties him. And then he's like, anyway, I need a drink. And she's like, you think you need a drink? Those people with that multi-million-dollar diamond need a drink. They're going to use that multi-million-dollar diamond to attract that big old monster into a waterfront. Anyway, I saw it on the news that they're going to be using a multi-million-dollar diamond. And it's like, it's so wild. It's so unusual. And I was like watching that scene and I was just like, I mean, I know you had to get him to there to have your dumb fight sequence at the end, but like, maybe
there had to be a more organic way, right?
Maybe rewrite that script scene a little bit. Maybe take that one back to the old drawing board.
So, speaking of drawing boards, that character, the woman who comes into the bar, was not in the first draft of the script. She was added in later. That's one of the Tokyo tidbits. I was going to go through some Tokyo tidbits after we finished Least Favorite Thoughts, but
boy.
That character was not in the original draft of the script, and they
I know why, because they were like, oh, wait, why would he come here for the scene to try and steal the diamond? Well, we need someone who just, like, tells him there's a diamond there. I guess we could write into a scene where, like, the hero would say something about it, or, you know, something like that. Or maybe he steals both the diamond and the opal, and he's still got the diamond, and they need to get the diamond back from him or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, we'll just, that would be hard. We're just going to have a lady walk in and be like, anyway, there's a diamond out there. It's so wild.
Oh, man. So let me go through the Tokyo tidbits, because some of these are actually really fun.
Sign me up.
So as we all know, anyone who's seen this movie knows that this is the only film in the Showa series to not feature a child as one of the main human characters.
Yes.
It is also, of course, the first Gamera movie in color, because the first movie was in black and white. this one is fun. So, I don't know if we've ever talked about this before, and I wish Marissa was on this episode so we could talk about it. But Japanese monster movies were often given bizarre translations in Germany. If you did not know about this, this is hilarious. So, most notably, references to the character Dr. Frankenstein were inserted into most of their movies released by Toho Studios. We'll get into that when we talk about some of the other movies that were released by Toho. But for specifically this one, Gamera is renamed to Barugon. And Barugon is renamed to Godzilla, which is pronounced Gochilla in German. The movie was given alternate titles: Godzilla, the Dragon from the Jungle; Godzilla, the Monster of Horror; and even Gamera versus Godzilla. So all those people that think Godzilla versus Gamera didn't happen, guess what? It sure did. There's a movie title.
Technically, oh boy. In the most technical ways possible, it did happen.
Confusing matters even further, there is a VHS cover for this movie that shows Gamera fighting against Zilla from G98 on the cover.
Wow. I mean, I want that VHS cover real bad.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely need that.
So, also, the first draft of the script did not have any references to the first movie at all.
I mean, this one hardly does, so...
The original idea for the film involved ice-based aliens invading Earth and oppressing humanity.
Impressing? Imprisoning.
Oppressing.
Okay.
Another idea the studio considered involved an ice giant from Scandinavian folklore.
Hell yeah, dude! Are you kidding me? Troll Hunter meets Gamera? Sign me up! 100%.
The original script also featured a more elaborate opening scene, and Gamera's rocket would have crashed to Earth before he escaped.
Oh. I mean, boy, that would have been better, huh? Anything other than a meteor happened to hit him perfectly and break him free, and then he came back to Earth, no problem.
So we've only got two more. We've only got two more, and then we'll move on to monster design. So the film was initially meant to be more adult-oriented, with the native dancers appearing topless. The dancers were going to be topless. While the movie was relatively serious and had some more adult moments, such as intense fights, in the end, the movie was released for child audiences in mind. I don't know what child watched this movie and was, like, super, like, happy with what was happening.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you're a kid, it really doesn't matter. You can put what, as long as it's, like, flashy. Yeah. The problem is it's so dull so consistently. And, like, yeah, I can't agree with, like, that this being, like, a kid-friendly movie, you know?
So to segue into monster designs, here's a really interesting Tokyo tidbit. I didn't know this, but it's really fun. Since the Barugon suit wouldn't sink because of the material it was made of, they had to cut like bits of it off to make air holes for it so it would sink. So like when it's sinking at the end, like if you actually like there's chunks of it missing, so it will sink to the bottom of the water. That's really cool to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Also, Tokyo tidbit that I'm not reading off of a list, this is something that I would love to point out, is that this movie also started the trend of the monsters that Gamera fights firing off whatever their attack is as they're dying. I don't know if, like, when Barugon sunk to the water, he fired up his rainbow, and then Gauss does it in the next movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay. And then they actually made it a plot point years and years later, not just a visual, cutesy metaphor.
All right. So let's move on to the monster design.
Monster design. Who do you want to start with?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, let's do Gamera first, because I kind of like this Gamera suit. Honestly like it better than, and I don't know if it's just like the film quality was better.
So did you notice what I said in the chat though, that there's two versions of the suit?
I didn't. I was looking for it.
Okay, so when Gamera is first fighting Barugan in the actual good fight sequence, the thing that we liked most about the movie.
Yeah.
There is, when Gamera is first fighting him, Gamera has actual painted eyes, real suit eyes. And then later in the movie, they went to what is used in the rest of the Showa films, which is just the eyes on a translucent material that has a light behind it that lights up the eye. And they unconvincingly use that to turn off the Gamera's asleep now.
His eyes are closing. No, we just turned a light bulb died.
No, I actually like Gamera in this movie a lot. I like that he fights mostly on all fours. I thought that was really cool, the turtle aspect being brought back into Gamera. That's cool to me. It makes the waffle iron suit not look as bad as it's supposed to.
Waffle irony, yeah. I think what makes it look so bad is that when he's standing sideways, it's just that he's so round that when he stands sideways, he looks so flat.
Yeah.
So he looks like a waffle. He looks like he's been pressed by a waffle or roadkill or something. Yeah. You know, he looks too flat.
So because he's on his all fours most of this movie, you don't really notice it as much.
You don't really see it. He's mostly either facing the camera or on all fours. And what I do really like is that he's got a lot of the head fringe that you see in the end of Hezai Gamera, you know?
Yeah.
As he gets eviler and darker, he gets more spiky and stuff. And I really love the design of this Gamera head. I like it personally better than, and I don't even know if it was supposed to be the same suit, but I like this Gamera suit better than the one in Gauss.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just that it was more battle damage, so it's falling apart a little bit more, but in this one it feels the plates on the back are
in Gauss it's that second suit.
Oh, okay. That would do it. It does really feel like there's just a noticeable drop in quality. And I guess it wasn't, by the end of the movie I wasn't looking for it because I was just oh, please end, you know.
I'm pretty sure the reason why the Gauss suit looks so not bad, because the Gauss suit isn't awful.
Wait,
but
the second Gamera suit in this movie.
Yes, yeah, the one with the light behind its eye. That's definitely.
Yeah,
yeah.
It just looks less detailed, you know.
Right.
It looks like they didn't spend as much, and I don't know if maybe it got damaged when they poured coolant on it, or if
I'm thinking that the first suit got damaged, and of course these movies were made with such a low budget that they couldn't build a brand new one.
Yeah. If they actually did freeze the suit and didn't just put white stuff on it, and it does kind of look like they actually sprayed it with a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
Then it's very likely that it just had because man, ice and rubber don't mix.
Yeah.
And I think if they actually did freeze the suit, then it just probably was all cracked and splintery. And they were I guess we could repaint it, but it's flaking now. And so we just got to make a new suit really quick.
Yeah. It's a thing. I don't know. I think that, like I said, I think the suit looks best at that first fight. And then that second fight,
definitely.
It looks okay, but it is definitely the eyes lit up suit. Let's move on to Barugan, though, because I think Barugan is fun to talk about.
This suit. I mean, okay, so when you first look at him, he's kind of he's too smooth. He doesn't really look very eye-catching.
Right.
But the way the suit actor moves in him, they do a really good job of hiding, when he's on his hands and knees.
Yeah.
The facial expressions on this thing is awesome. I really love when they close his eyes when he takes a nap, and when he wakes up, the lights in his eyes and on his spines all light up. He's got these really cool forward facing spines on his back.
Yeah.
He's got a big old toothy shark mouth, but
this thing is very clearly inspired by a chameleon because of its big old tongue.
Yeah.
Which at first is mostly just used to punch things, but then is revealed to be like an ice machine producer thing.
He can shoot but ice out of the tip of it. Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't need that because if he just walks by you, it also freezes things, you know? Yeah. So like I was kind of confused as to what exactly his power set was. Because it seems like it's, I've got an extendo tongue. I've got an extendo tongue that can also turn into a fire hydrant. Also, it can grab things, which is one of the cooler scenes when he wraps around Ortega.
Onodera.
No.
Ortega. Ortega. Nash.
A little Gundam reference for you. But like, you know, like that's a really cool sequence when he like wraps up that dude and like eats him. I loved that. I really love the rainbow thing. It is kind of hilarious because it doesn't involve any effort from the suit actor. So it's just kind of like suddenly like Barugan is just sitting, like standing there, not moving at all. And then like this rainbow boop reaches out of his back and has insane 360 no scope accuracy.
Yeah.
It is wild. Miles away, a thing he can't even see. Or presumably, I can only maybe hear, like, when, like, they're gonna rock, like, launch rockets at him, he just kind of, like, wakes up from his nap, he's like, huh? And unlike Zigra, who had to, like, get hit in the face by several rocks before he finally woke up, Barugan wakes up once and immediately is like, uh-oh, they're about to launch missiles at me. And fires a microwave superheated rainbow up into the air in an arc to go blow up their entire arsenal of missiles.
Yep.
He's super cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So like what I want to say about him is like, I always liked him a lot as far as Gamera villains, because for four-legged kaiju, you don't really see a lot of four-legged kaiju with such a big giant head like he has.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that makes him really unique. And, like, yeah, the chameleon aspect of him, like, he literally looks like one of those chameleons with the horns on their nose.
Yeah.
Like, it's just very, very cool. And something funny to me is that, like, on the Barugan suit, they gave him eyelids to that close. Like, his eyes have lights behind them, just like the Gamera suit, but he also has actual eyelids.
Yeah. So he closes his eyes, and when he's waking up right before he, like, right before the fight sequence when he blows up all the missiles, his eyelids open, and then the lights come on. So it's kind of like he's like, like he first wakes up, and then, like, it's not like until he's alert that his like eyes light up. Yeah. I loved that, man.
It's a
very
cool effect.
It was really cool.
Yeah. No, I've always had a soft spot for Barugan. He's one of the kaiju that I would have loved to see, like, show back up in the Hezai Gamera series, like, reimagined with, like, a cooler suit and stuff like that. And it's not that the suit is bad. It's just, it's a 60s suit. Like, I would have loved to see, like, a 90s redesign.
Yeah.
Barugan.
I think he's visually unimpressive because he is just kind of like a gray, like, featureless, like, meat tube.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, again, cool powers, cool eye effects, and then, like, good teeth and, like, a good sharp spiky nose. But he doesn't, like, I wish there was more of, like, a chameleon coloration to him or something to make him, like, pop a little bit.
I agree with that.
But it's mostly night sequences, so you wouldn't really get to appreciate that. But it would have been nice to see, you know, some color on him.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, even like the Guirin, like, you know, green spray paint on top of a gray monster look would have been fine, you know?
Yeah. That's why I'm saying I would love to see like a reimagining of him, like later on. He's probably one of my favorite Gamera villains. Like, he's like probably number five or, you know, whatever, after the Hezai and the Gauss, of course. I mean, he's definitely better than Jiger and all that stuff, which we'll talk about at some point. I really like the Barugan design. I think you described it pretty perfectly. Like, I like all the stuff. I think the rainbow beam, like you said, it is kind of awkward because he does just kind of sit there, the suit actor.
Flarps out of him. Yeah. It's not like he charges it, or it's not like you see like his coloration change or anything. And you could see like in a modern or even like a 90s or 2000s, you know, kaiju movie, like his skin shifts colors and like, you know, it's like, whoa, what's happening to him? You know, yeah. Oh, is he trying to activate his camouflage? And then like, blah, a laser beam flies out of his back.
When you said you know, that, I just thought of like, oh, this would be so cool. So like, let's say he looks like a traditional chameleon, right?
Yeah.
So whenever he's about to fire his rainbow beam, like his camouflage aspects like kind of go into overdrive. And so he's
get all weird and like
him.
Flickering.
And then
yeah.
like as he's about to fire the beam, like they all like drain out of him towards his
ooh,
spikes
yeah.
and he becomes the flat gray Baragon that we've seen in this movie. Like, so it's just like flat gray, but like, yeah. So all the color comes out of him into the spikes
yeah.
and it shoots out as the rainbow. And then like, he powers down from it. And
yeah.
The color comes back into him. I would love to see that.
That would have been, yeah.
I know that's asking much from a 60s movie. I know they couldn't have done that
fair.
Back then. But
yeah,
if we
they
saw a
done
new
this...
version of him,
yes.
like that would be the best.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's, oh yeah. One thing that we kind of already mentioned with Baragon before we move on, is it is very impressive. All the suit damage that they did to him, like
yeah.
all the battle damage, they really did a good job in this movie of that, where like
yeah.
the most impressive
Dae,
one.
Oh, Dae so does not care. Dae doesn't care. They're
yeah.
going to blow this suit up. It doesn't matter. I don't care if we're never going to use this suit again. I don't care about continuity. I'm going to blow this suit up.
Yeah.
I'm going to do as much physical damage to the suit in every sequence that I can, as frequently as I can.
Yeah.
And, like, that's impressive. Like, Toho can't fail if you give them, like, something to blow up. Dae can't fail at destroying their own monsters.
Yeah, no, I really, like I said, I really, really liked the whole... I think you talked about it earlier, after they reflect the laser, the rainbow back
ooh,
at
yeah.
him, and he's got like these like boils almost along his
yeah,
back.
Yeah, he's been
that
burned.
Like the, yeah,
his
it's
purple blood.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Really good.
Also, the purple blood was a very good choice.
It really
it
pops.
Out.
It really stands out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it stands out with the color palette this movie chose to go with, like that like
yeah.
almost black and whitey. Even though it is color, like it almost has a black and white feel to it. So like whenever
yeah.
there's a bright, vibrant color like the purple, it really stands out against the
yeah.
drab of everything else. but anyway, okay. So let's move on to special effects and cinematography. Because there's some stuff to talk about. There's one scene that didn't make it into our favorite and least favorite moments that you mentioned in the chat that I wanted to talk about too, special effects-wise, is the opal, the hatching.
Ooh, yes. I forgot to talk about that. Yeah, that would have been... Oh, man. I even said, oh, this egg sequence is going to be my favorite moment. And I totally spaced on it. So I'll just say, first off, the lighting in this movie, throughout the human moments and throughout the giant monster fights... the lighting is spectacular. They did a really, really impressive job on this movie.
Yeah.
And I know how difficult rigging a light can be, and I know doubly so how difficult it can be when you don't have a budget. and it's like, it's man, they I really appreciate the look of this movie.
Right.
I everything felt good, and like it wasn't, there were never scenes that were too like where the camera is too close, even in the like kind of claustrophobic scenes where like they're planning their heist to go get the opal, right? Even in moments where they're in the bar and they're having a fight scene, they do a really good job of positioning the camera far enough away that you see everything, and like you don't get that awkward like the top of that person's head is cut off kind of thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, the cinematography in this movie is actually pretty good, like, especially for a 60s movie. Like, it's pretty good. There's a lot, there are some, like flubs every once in a while. Like, there's a couple of jump cuts, there's a couple of, like, little things like that every once in a while. But, like I kind of really appreciate the fact that, like, in a lot of the monster scenes, like we said, like, it's almost black and white, so the colors can really pop. Because I really like... It's almost a transition movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost, because the monster scenes almost look black and white half the time, going from the original Gamera to this is not as big of a, like, a jump, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, I could see that. I could see that almost being, like, a purposeful thing.
It might have
I can't say with any certainty because of how, like, goofy and poorly done, like, the script is.
Yeah.
But, like, visually... Because it's like the first big fight scene is set in that like snowy like, you know, nighttime sequence and like the way that they're both kind of like gray and black monsters. It looks like a black and white movie. And then at the very end, when they have their second confrontation, he doesn't have his ice powers anymore. And it's like with a green backdrop. And it's like, you know, it's not like, you know, like, welcome to Wonderland, Alice. Like, it's not that big. Like, it's not suddenly Technicolor.
Right.
But it really is. Like, this is a good transition movie. I fully agree with what you're saying. Yeah.
So, yeah. So the one special effects sequence, really, other than just the monster stuff, which, as we said in our favorite moments, is really pretty good in this movie when it happens. Is the egg, the opal hatching sequence. I actually don't quite know how they pulled it off. The puppetry, like, I get the puppetry for the little baby Barugan, but I don't understand, I don't know how, what they used for the egg, like the opal, like as it grew with the light and it kind of like misformed and like did all sorts of crazy stuff. I'm guessing they used some sort of material that reacts to heat, but I just don't know what they did. It's very cool and very convincing.
So there's the two sequences of it that I really like. There's the first was Jizzit superheating, and I almost want to say,
oh, when it's burning through the jacket, right?
Yeah, when it's burning through the jacket, what I think they did there is they did just have like a heated lamp inside of a jacket, and then they turned on that heated lamp. So it wasn't like, you know, they didn't have like a hot like thing aiming on it so much as there was a hot thing inside of a pocket that slowly like melted the polyester of the jacket.
Right.
And that was really cool because it's like, oh, the like infrared light is like heating up the egg and making it hatch. But then its second sequence when it's like actually born, it looks like a straight up alien egg.
Yeah.
Like it's this greasy, slimy, like veiny thing, and then like it kind of like slowly peels open. It doesn't crack like an egg.
Yeah.
It really does kind of like slowly split open like a you know, like an egg from a xenomorph egg.
Yeah,
you know. Oh man, that was cool. It was super creepy.
It was very cool. Yeah, it's very creepy, very cool, and it's like, it's little stuff like that that really does elevate this movie sometimes. Like there's those scenes in this movie that you're like, okay, this movie is pretty cool. But then there's the other stuff that you're like,
yeah.
So let's move on to sound real quick. So you kind of mentioned the plane, the crackling, like it makes it sound like it's like ripping a fabric and stuff like that. There's some weird mismatched sound effects, I feel like, in this movie every once in a while.
Yeah.
Did
you like Barugan's noise? I wasn't a big fan.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
Because it's very screechy. And this is something we talk about. It has a lot of like vocal range where he makes a lot of different noises.
Yeah.
But it's not quite as bad as like the elephant from Guanji. But it really grated on me. It's like this really high pitched, screechy. Yeah. Like I'm not going to do it because it sucked. Yeah. It was not fun to listen to.
It wasn't. Yeah, no, I agree.
And then on top of that, with Gamera's already pretty screechy voice, it's like, oh, it's just too like toddlers yelling at each other.
Yeah, Marissa watched it with me, and she like anytime Gamera roared, she was like, oh my god. And it's like, yeah, they didn't like tone it down at all in this movie. With Gamera's roar, they like kicked his like volume up to 11 in this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Barugan's roar. I was weirded out by his little like clicks and stuff when he was the baby, when he first popped under the egg. I was weirded out because I've seen this movie before, so I knew what he was going to sound like when he was an adult, and I just didn't remember what he sounded like as a kid. And they don't connect. Like, it doesn't, the sounds aren't similar at all. So, I guess
you could have just made it like weird hissing noises or something, but
yeah. So I had a little bit of a problem with that, but it wasn't like a big deal. But the one thing that I really didn't actually like that much was the music in this movie. This is the type of musical score where they like they made one song and they pretty much just play that one song over and over again. It's really apparent.
Yeah, I haven't seen the first Gamera, but I really felt like just from listening to it, I was like, this sounds like something that was made 10 years before this movie and like was reused here or something. Like, it did feel like they had the one song from Gamera, and then they were like, well, I guess we'll just use this here.
We'll just
it doesn't
repeat it.
Feel really like thematically, it doesn't build on things. It's not like they have like a really like tribal, like jungly noise when they're like exploring the world.
Yeah.
Oh, I did forget to mention this. Another favorite moment. I'm just going to throw this in here because I'm talking about the jungle scene, is the bad guy falls into like some water, the quicksand. It's very clearly just water, but he falls into quicksand. And then like the main character and his best friend are like, we've got to save him quick. And they both panic and start looking around frantically, and they don't know what to do. And then one of them is like, I'm going to cut this vine and swing over to him. And then he grabs onto the vine, swings, misses the bad guy, and is now just kind of dangling awkwardly over him. Meanwhile, the other guy's like, I'll also help, and climbed up onto a tree and was just like looking at them awkwardly.
Yeah.
And it was so hilarious, their bumbling attempt to try and save their friend. It eventually works out because like the guy on the vine like lowers his leg and like, you know, the bad guy can grab his leg and pull himself out. But that was so hilarious.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was great. But yeah, there's not really much else to say with sound. I think we can probably wrap this up here.
Yeah.
Do you want to say your final thoughts first? Or would you rather I go?
I'll go.
Okay.
I'll go. I think I got something here.
Okay.
So this movie is kind of rough for me because like there's a side of me that kind of wants to really like it. I think that when it is, you know, Gamera fighting Barugan, it's really beautifully shot. The special effects of like the ice and like even the effect that the rainbow has, not necessarily the rainbow itself, which just looks like a rainbow, but the shot composition, the lighting, the effects all blend together super well to make an awesome kaiju battle that you could tell me like, oh, this was like from like the late Showa era. And yeah. I would believe you 100%. It feels like there's budget and time and effort and love put into it. And I was like, man, if only the rest of the movie had the caliber of this 10-minute fight sequence.
Yeah.
God, because it literally starts with like a few seconds of Gamera from the last movie, then Gamera lands and blows up a water, like a dam, which probably only takes about three or four minutes of screen time before he like fucks off and he's gone. He doesn't show up for a huge chunk of the movie, which is just this weird Ocean's 11 betrayal, like crime thriller,
right?
But without like the acting chops to pull it off or like the stakes to make it really emotionally in like invest me in it, you know? And then once it becomes a kaiju movie again, it's like, oh, well, all these characters have to now be involved in the kaiju plot. And like they all kind of fall into those traditional roles, except for the bad guy who still wants to be a villain. And it's just like those two sides of this coin cannot match. It's like if you had a coin and you flipped it on one side, it's like, oh, it's a silver dollar, and then you flipped it over and it's like somehow magically turned into a penny, and you're like, what happened? That's it. Like, I don't know how to make these two movies fit together, you know? And it just it sucks. It's like it's not great. I love the moments I love about this movie, I love to death.
Yeah.
The moments I don't like about it are a drag, and they make you wish that it was a giant monster movie again. And you're just sitting there waiting and hoping to hear Gamera shriek at the camera so you can look up from your phone or like come out of your coma, like, or whatever. Like, there were moments where I was just staring at this movie, not because I wanted to watch it, but because it was like, well, I got nothing else to do and my phone's dying, so I'll just keep waiting for Gamera, you know, and that's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I can recommend this to a lot of people. I feel like if you have the time and you haven't seen it, then the Gamera fight sequences are super worth it. But if you're a Gamera fan, then you're a fan because of like the goofy moments, right? if you like Gamera, you either like the Hezai Gamera, which is like awesome, action packed, and like really well written, or you like Showa Gamera, and you're thinking of like Gamera versus Gauss or Gamera versus Guirin, where it's like really kind of like childish and fun. Yeah. This is like there's betrayal and abuse and like violence enacted towards fellow men, and like this just like really dark middle part of the movie that takes up so much time.
Yeah.
And then like it cuts back to fun like kaiju action, and it's like, man, I don't know who to sell this movie to, but it's not the traditional kaiju going audience, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my final thoughts.
So yeah, okay. So I remember liking this movie a lot more than I did on rewatch. I think that okay. Here's the thing. Like I said, I think my biggest problem with this movie is the tonal dissonance of like it not knowing if it wants to be a fun Showa Gamera movie or if it wants to be a serious, like take it serious movie like the first movie. Yeah. And I will say this, as far as production values go and actually like story goes, this does remind me most of Showa Godzilla. As far as all the Gamera movies, like this one reminds me the most of a Showa Godzilla film.
Yeah.
But it's all still performed in a cheaper version, and you know, like it doesn't feel quite, I don't know, it just doesn't feel quite right. There's just something about it, and I think you kind of nailed it on the head though, is like the fact is that the kaiju stuff is really fun. It's that early Showa, like it is taking itself serious enough, but there's still some fun moments in it. It's not it's not quite goofy, but it's still a little fun. But the human story is just so serious. It takes itself almost a little too seriously while still having these weird moments of just like funny, weird, like, why is it called Operation Rearview Mirror? Like, that's so stupid.
I'm from a tribe and we have a magical gem that lets us attack, like deal with this monster. Again, like like the human drama doesn't sync up, right, man.
Exactly. So like, honestly, like as far as recommending it to people, like if you're a hardcore, like you want to watch all the kaiju movies out there, like, I mean, you could do worse than this movie, honestly. Like,
definitely. Yeah.
It's not that this movie is awful. It's just, personally, I would tell you, if you were watching the Gamera series, you were like, okay, I want to watch some of the Showa Gamera series. What should I watch? I would tell you to probably avoid this movie, because this movie doesn't really, it doesn't show anything of the other Showa Gamera movies in it. Like, yeah. The original
it's not funny like the rest of the Showa, and it's not like serious like the first one. It's like, right, this weird in-between state. You know?
It is, but like, here's the thing. For me personally, I think Gauss does a better job at being that weird in-between movie than any of the other ones, because Gauss still takes itself seriously 95% of the time. There's some goofy stuff thrown in there, and it's not like super serious, like everybody's talking really seriously the entire time. But like, you still get that feeling of like, I don't know, that it's a serious, it's still a serious movie. Like, Gauss is still a threat, like stuff like
yeah.
that. And like, this movie just, it takes itself too seriously, doesn't have any levity to it, really. And when it does try and throw a little bit of levity, it's just, it's not, it doesn't flow. It doesn't make sense with the rest of the plot. Like I said, if somebody was coming to me with asking like, oh, I've heard about Gamera, I really want to check out like the older Gamera films, I would tell them to watch the original. I would tell them to watch Gauss, and I would tell them to watch Guirin, but I would not tell them to watch this one. I don't think I would. I would be like, you can skip the second one. Just go straight to Gauss. Like, you're not going to miss anything. Just Gamera got back to Earth somehow. That's all you need to know. so I personally, like, I don't think this movie stands up. I think that the reason why I remember this movie so fondly isn't because of the movie itself. It's because of the monster fights. And the monster fights, if you want to just skip to them, like, you'll have a fun time with the monster fights at least.
I think there's something to be said of just, like, fast forwarding or kind of, like, having something else to do. Like, this is a good background movie, you know, because you can kind of like not pay attention too much and still understand the plot like really easily. it's the, what makes it worth watching are those like 15 to 20 minutes that are a kaiju movie.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like entertaining and fun and visually stunning, as opposed to just like visually well shot, like well composited. Yeah. You know,
definitely.
Yeah, man. Kind of a bummer. Apparently Cameron really loved this movie.
Cameron really likes this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sad that he couldn't be here to kind of like be the, you know, be the middleman to kind of say like, oh, well, but I think, guys.
Yeah.
I think probably how it would go is he would say like, I really like this movie. It was dumb and I hated it. And then we'd both stop. And then like, I'd look at him and be like, oh, I said you liked it. And he'd be like, oh yeah. And then he would actually explain why he liked it. I feel like that's his branding at this point on the cast.
Right. Yeah, that sounds right. all right. So, that's our thoughts on Gamera versus Barugan.
Barugan.
Like I said, I will be absent from the next two episodes, but Rob and Cameron have already picked out what they are doing for the end of March.
Yes.
Rob, what are you guys doing?
So there's a little anime that we've been talking about pretty frequently called SSSS Gridman. I had to count it out on my hand because I keep forgetting.
It's four.
It's four. Super Cyborg Samurai Super Squad. Anyway, the point is, we're watching the Gridman anime,
yeah,
and we're going to talk about it. And man, that's going to be a crazy episode, because not only do we have to cover the plot, not only do we have to cover a plethora of characters, not only do we have to cover all of the monster designs, we also have to introduce like the most anime that we've ever done on the podcast. Are Cameron and I up to the task?
We'll find out.
Find out next time on Tokyo Lives.
But yeah, so
feels like more of an ender.
They're covering Gridman next. And then I think you guys already have the beginning of April like in the works, but it's not ready to be announced
yet
what you guys are doing.
It's not 100% finalized. We're talking with a special guest. I won't spoil anything. But we're working on something for a special kind of like a fun little beginning of April episode. I think you'll enjoy it.
So, let's do all the bumps. So patreon.com, search Tokyo Lives. You'll find our Patreon there. As we stated at the beginning of the cast, there are new reward tiers. They give you new stuff. If you somehow skipped the beginning of the cast and ended up here, just Google search the Patreon and you'll find out what the new reward tiers. I'm not going back over them again. but thank you to David Myers, William Kish, Destroya, Jesse Hickman, Melissa Carter, Alex Yarbrough, Nicholas Whale, Taylor Ward, and Chris Britt. You guys are amazing. You guys help us out so much. You have no idea how much that money is helping us out. Getting us a Dropbox subscription and making it so we can all get the comic. And it's the little bit of money that we're getting from you guys is helping immensely. Rob, Cameron is not here, so you got to come up with a $13.75.
You know, I'm glad you asked. So for a $13.75, I will deposit somewhere in your house a live egg, and we'll have to figure out where that egg is based off of a complex series of clues that I leave. Cameron will be dressed up as a tasteful version of a tribesman. And we'll be trying to thwart our efforts to get this egg out of your house before it hatches or spoils.
I thought you were going to say Cameron was going to be dressed up as one of the scorpions.
Oh, gosh, that would be... Hold on, let me edit that in. Cameron will be dressed as one of the scorpions. And we'll have to try and best avoid him while we... you'll splice it in. You'll be fine. It looks fine.
Anyway, to continue our bumps, we've got our Twitter, which we are extremely active on. Please join us on Twitter, at Tokyo Lives Cast. Me and Rob posting all the time. We are, like, super on top of our Twitter. We are also on Facebook. Search Tokyo Lives on Facebook. And, of course, the website is TokyoLivesPodcast.com. I know I say it every single time, but we do have some articles in the works. I'm not going to go into specifics of what they are. Of course, my article kind of got delayed by all the baby stuff, but I should have a little bit of time in between stuff to work on it. So hopefully that'll go up soon. But yeah, check out our articles there. If a new trailer for Godzilla comes out, that'll be where we post our breakdown of the trailer and all sorts of good stuff like that. So,
yeah.
And of course, on iTunes, leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the cast. We'll read it on the show. It'd be great. Yeah, hope you guys enjoyed us talking about Gamera versus Barugon. And I hope
I'll see you next time for Gridman. Because yes. I know usually we say we, but I wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, and I will see you all at the end of April when we talk about all the Godzilla comics and then lead into King of the Monsters. So, like I said, you still probably will see articles and stuff from me popping up every once in a while, because I can do articles during all this, but all the other stuff is kind of a little too labor intensive for yeah. me at the moment. But anyway, we will see you guys next time, Rob will see you guys next time, and I'll be listening to the cast next time. I'll be listening to it as as one of you listeners out there. So that's gonna be fun.
I'll send you the After Dark. I'm sure you'll be able to at least. I'll pity you, Kyle.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I don't know. Do we have like a good After Dark at some point?
Like an after credit, you mean?
Yeah. Do we have like a funny bit that
I'm
we
sure
have
there's
to cut?
Something
I don't
we
remember.
Pull. I'm sure there's something we can pull.
I feel like. So okay, I just want to talk about this. We didn't talk about it on the cast. Their first big plan was that they put that diamond inside of the shark cage at the bottom of the helicopter, and then they were like, it didn't work because the infrared light made him too big because he's a mutant now. You'd think that like maybe that would have been the first thing to mention is like, oh, he's like way big.
Also,
it's the dumbest idea.
After credit scene. No, to add to this little after credit section, like they also mentioned specifically that a bunch of diamonds were thrown to the bottom of the lake to draw the Barugon in. So the mutation doesn't even matter, really. Like, one diamond's not enough.
She's not a scientist. She's not a scientist, Kyle. She's not a scientist.
Oh, boy.